Man, that is like middle school.
Episode 69. Middle school for you old folks.
Hey, hey, hey.
That was like my mama's music.
I am still, stop. Stop, man. Okay, I'm not saying that your mom is old, but all I'm saying is I'm under 50, so.
Well, welcome back to Pints and Politics, episode 69.
Yeah, yeah, the Jared Allen episode.
Yes.
I think
it was a toss-up between the RJ May, Joe Biden 69 or the Jared Allen episode. But
trying to keep it, you know, on a positive note and you know, with football players. Yeah, Jared Allen, drafted by the Chiefs. Everyone probably knows him as a Viking.
A menace.
Yeah. Yeah, on the outside, he got inducted to the Hall of Fame. Like, he was a pro bowler and all that stuff, and then got inducted to the Hall of Fame, yeah, this year.
And just like most of the sack leaders in the NFL, they come to Carolina to end their career.
Right.
Get those last few sacks on the stat. Reggie White, Kevin Green. Well, Julius Peppers had his before. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have so many of the sack leaders listed. Bruce Smith's the only one that didn't come to us.
I didn't even realize he was a Carolina Panther until I went and looked it up. I was like, what? Oh, for a year.
Didn't last long.
No.
But let's thank our sponsor.
Comer Distributing, once again, for providing the tasty beverage. This is, again, from No Dob Brewing. I think our last one was as well.
Yeah.
But this is a pumpkin ale.
Was it gorgeous pumpkin ale?
I think so. And
6.4%.
So be careful.
Yeah, I know. You said to you it was earthy. To me, I like it. It doesn't taste quite as earthy as the IPAs.
Yeah, it's got like an allspice and pumpkin to it.
Has a little bit of sweetness to it.
Yeah, it's got definitely a fall flavor to it.
Yeah.
And with the weather as it is, 45 in the morning.
What? About broke out the fox hunting outfit.
Slow down. I don't know if it's that cold yet, but I know you're excited to get into that outfit.
Man, I bought so much tourist swag while I was in Chicago because I went from Orlando where it was 83.
Oh boy, yeah.
Landed in Chicago and it was 43, and the clothes that I had were for Orlando. So hey, I buy every sweatshirt at the airport.
That's where you need to get that quarter zip action going.
Oh, it was bad. I was not prepared, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I was putting on like two t-shirts, a button-up, then a jacket. Right.
So, I mean, it has been a while, it seems. We're trying to get these locked in every 2 weeks, and we almost let the weekend get away from us.
We've been traveling quite a bit, both of us.
So, man, I've been having, and I'm not going to go in chronological order, but, you know, I think the last time I hinted at, I had thrown in an op-ed that was going to be published at Fitz News, talking about our need for action in the State House in regards to...
You got a little pushback on that, too.
As far as regulating hemp drinks. And again, I think I was suggesting in my conversations with some senators and some representatives in the off-season... Everyone agrees this thing, there needs to be an age verification to where kids cannot walk into, whether it's a CBD, THC store that's selling like edibles and things, or if it's folks who are going to their neighborhood, Piggly Wiggly, Harris Teeter, you know, a retailer, and getting a high-rise 5 milligram.
But this is all coming from a personal perspective,
right,
of a situation that happened in your district. So.
And so did take a meeting with some industry folks, met them in Columbia, and man, just had some good, deliberate, thoughtful discussions. And it's funny, you know, when you put out an op-ed like that that says, hey, look, we've got to act now. There's folks in each chamber that want to ban it. There's other folks in both chambers that probably could care less. It's not one of their priorities. But I think it's time that we need to act with some reasonable, pragmatic solutions, and that's why I offered, you know, being able to age verify it through a retailer in an ABC store. And some folks...
Isn't that a violation of First Amendment, right? Anytime you get asked somebody for an ID?
And again, some folks took that as I am, like, hardcore, it's got to go that route, you know? And I said, guys, at the end of the day, at a bare minimum, I want sensible regulations where kids can't access it.
So that sounds very familiar.
And so I think we'll get there. You know, it reminded me, I was reminded in one of those meetings that we did pass House legislation.
Yeah.
That effort was led by our friend Chris Wooten out of Lexington. And we passed that out of the House that said basically anything containing these ingredients has to be, you know, 21 or older. And that includes the edibles, the gummies, any sort of like brownies, candy bar, whatever. And then that also includes hemp drinks. So,
yeah, and the drinks are the danger side because it's presented as a non-alcoholic, just friendly drink, but yet it's four servings in one little can.
Right, and there's just a lot of products. There's a lot in America. There's a lot of choices. Sometimes I can't tell. I remember when Celsius and some of those drinks came out, I didn't know what they were. You know what I mean? I thought they were hemp drinks at first, but then my kid says, no, Dad, that's just an energy drink, but it's a more healthy energy drink, supposedly, than, say, a Red Bull or something like that. And so there's just a lot of products out there. They're not labeled uniformly, and I mean in a cooler, in a end cap at a grocery store. I just, you know, to the uninformed consumer, and that's probably me when it comes to hemp drinks and energy drinks, because I don't really drink either of those. I think we just got to inform consumers. So
I mean, it's the most dangerous thing since Four Loko. I mean, I remember whenever they first come out, because I was thinking about that. You know, you go in, you buy a can, regardless of what you buy at a gas station.
Yeah.
You can't walk in and buy a can of just bourbon, which would completely trash you.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
But you can go in and buy a beer, but very rarely, Four Loko is the only thing I ever remember that could really mess you up.
And it was one serving.
Off of one can, well, right?
And maybe
until these things.
Yeah. And maybe even, and again, taking meetings with the folks who, say, distribute these hemp drinks or whatever, or have retail shops, you know, you get an education.
Yeah.
You know, that's the great thing about, you know, being a representative or a senator is that, man, you sit down with the folks who are in the know of their industry. And I didn't realize all the different levels of, there's a 5 milligram, there's a 10 milligram, there's a 20 milligram. There's things that are sold in more like a liter that looks sort of like a liquor or a wine bottle, that you literally just put a shot into, say, Sprite or ginger ale. Again, because I'm not out in a bar ordering that kind of stuff, I didn't know some of those options were out there. And so, yeah, I think we're going to be able to get something done. I think it's a priority. I'm thinking that the Senate can actually take up our House bill and we can get it even done
faster. Make some modifications there.
So, you know, stay tuned. Again, that's just one of the things in this past 2 weeks been trying to work on, and a lot of it's just making phone calls, you know. So our House bill is now sitting over in the Senate. It is in the Ag Committee. And so I believe Senator Johnson out of Fort Mill is going to be the subcommittee chair.
Very nice.
Senator Clymer is the chair of Ag. So I think, you know, in communicating with them, they want to definitely regulate this stuff. So, you know, just look forward, stay tuned, updates on that. So,
well, you are very effective on a phone. We'll say that. If you ever stay with Heath, it's about 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30. All of a sudden, you just hear him on the phone,
walking around, getting coffee. Got the AirPods.
Two to three hours. It's just phone calls, conference call. Yeah. It even did whenever we were doing the filming for one of the documentaries. Yeah. I asked Heath. I was like, "Oh yeah, well, we're over here at Knowledge Park. You want to come over here?" And he comes over and sits down. Well, afterwards, the producer comes up. It's like, we kept getting this background noise. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, Heath was on a conference call the whole time he's doing the interview.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was on a Teams meeting. That's right. Because it was B-Real, remember?
Yeah.
And so I just have my AirPod in, and I'm participating in
Teams meeting. Picking up the conversation in the AirPod.
Yeah, so that was one of the things. Another thing that I am just learning a lot about is all of this stuff, you know, the decision, our administrative law court just came down with the Rahm Reddy decision that said he's got to tear that seawall down.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Over there on Isle of Palms. That just came out like Wednesday or maybe Thursday. Mm. Thursday. It's a 39-page opinion. And that administrative law judge said that the state didn't have the authority to fine him, so they took the fines out, but did tell Rahm Reddy, who is the private landowner there on the south side of IOP, that he's got to take the seawall down. So, and again, those types
and
of...
And the seawall can protect your property, but can also cause problems for other properties.
It does have off-site impacts, 100%. So you can protect your little space, but then it focuses the energy of those tides to other softer neighbors who don't have a seawall. So,
well, speaking of ROM, we also had the situation come out over the past couple weeks. I mean, I don't know how you got it, but on the judicial reform bill, I just got an email and said, hey, would you look over this? This is something that you would consider.
Yep.
And kind of looked over it. Looks like it's a pre-draft of a pre-file bill. So it's not a bill yet, but an idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well, this kind of makes sense. And then next thing you know, this press release comes out. And I think it's me, you.
I think you and I are fellow revolutionaries. Fist bump on that. I've never been called a revolutionary before. And so when I saw that, I was like, what the hell? But, you know, I didn't do the press release. I didn't do all the social media work on that. But, I mean, I wouldn't have called myself that. But I think
that's just the group that they are supporting.
Yeah. And I think that's more of just a common sense reform that we couldn't get done in the original judicial reform, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah. And look, I honestly am not worried about whether the one thing... I'm not worried about the governor appointing people on the GMSC. I'm not particularly fond about saying it's got to be this many law enforcement and everything else, because JMSC is law enforcement's one division. Lawyers are a whole nother division.
Right.
And I think that we need more lawyers on it, but I'm fine with the governor appointing those.
Yeah.
And I think
retired judges,
someone
with a legal background.
Right. And we set the precedent to say, hey, anybody that comes out of there, if we don't like you, we ain't voting for you.
Correct. And for our two listeners, this, again, reasonable reform takes, currently the model is that when folks want to apply to be a family court, circuit court, appeals court, or Supreme Court judge or justice, they fill out their application, it gets turned in, and it goes to the JMSC. And I'm going to give you a high level. The JMSC was recently reformed. It used to be made up of just House and Senate members, and there
five
was
and five,
you know, six and six, but all of those appointments came from the Speaker and the President of the Senate. So it was just a legislature controlled body, the JMSC.
And constitutionally, it doesn't state how the JMSC has to be set up.
And so once those applications are reviewed by JMSC, they get feedback from the bar. They publish that review, and then they're deemed qualified or unqualified, or I think it was very qualified back then. What this new reform that we passed a year or so ago, it changed the makeup of JMSC that said, "Hey, we want the governor to have some appointments as well, along with the House and Senate." And so membership went from, instead of six and six, it went 4-4-4 or 5-5-5. I can't remember the exact makeup. The point is that now the executive branch
has input,
you know, a voice at the table. Now, fast forward to this past week, of which, you know, you're referring to this press release that Ron Reddy's group, DOJESSE, pushed out. The latest reform that you and I signed on to, the idea of it, now again, devil's in the details, is to further change the JMSC body to make it governor appointees.
Yes.
The House and Senate are out of it. And that way it sort of balances, and because in South Carolina, the legislature, it's a very legislative, the power is vested in the Senate and in the House. We are trying to make this a little bit more co-equal branches of government with this latest reform. And again, if it goes anywhere, we'll see.
And we haven't even had our first year. This will be our first year under what we passed for judicial reform, which we spent a year in committee going over. And the one thing I was most disappointed about that whole situation was I really do not like the fact of holdover from senators appointing magistrates.
Yeah, right, where folks can be in a holdover status.
Yes.
And then basically, if the senator wanted to, could really hold that over the judge.
Yeah, but I do like, you know, one of the ideas put out by DOJESSE, which was, you know, jury trial for... family court, because we hear a lot of complaints of people feeling like, not just that, I'm learning a lot with probate as well.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we elect those judges.
Yeah. And another thing is, I mean, and again, this is just an idea, and when all this stuff came out, had some conversations. We have some folks who are chairs of House committees right now that sponsored just this type of reform 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so now, and again, Doge SC has been the latest person out front and pushing it on social media, so it looks like this is a new idea. It is not. This idea has been around for a while. Now, the issue is, will it be a priority for us to get it done in the House or in the Senate, right, so the governor can sign on to it? Because I'm sure the governor, our existing, you know, Governor Henry McMaster right now, I'm sure he'd be a fan of it.
Well, I'm sure with the way the press release was put out, it was basically some Freedom Caucus leadership, some House leadership, and then members like me, you.
And others.
Yeah, and others. That we qualify as the and others.
Yeah.
That kind of said, yeah, we would agree with this. But I think there's a little bit of heartburn from some that just feel like they were not even included in the conversation.
Well, and because the press release was put out with no communication to the entire body, some folks who actually agree with this reform,
like, hey, why wasn't
didn't get a chance to sign on to it, right? And so I think that's where some of the frustration lies, and also just a little bit of not communicating, right?
Yes.
So, but I think all is well. We'll just see what we can do.
Yeah, I mean, pre-files, what, second week of December?
Yeah.
I think is whenever we turn them in, so we'll see how things go.
Yep, and a little update then on, while we're on the topic of judicial elections and how we
just to point out, there are plenty of bills that have Freedom Caucus, Republican Caucus members on it.
Yeah,
correct. So this isn't like a, you know, this some
is,
huge new
correct
thing unique that's situation. Happening. Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw this. Talking about judicial elections here in the 16th Circuit last go round, we ended up only having one candidate.
Yep.
That we even had a choice to interview and then see if she was, you know, someone that we wanted to put on the bench. We decided through that process that she was not someone that we were going to put on the bench.
And I just didn't like the process.
Correct.
Didn't even get that far to make the decision.
Yep. And so we, you know, did not fill Judge Hall's seat through that process. Since that happened, I think you, myself, others, whether it's Tommy Pope, David Martin, and some of our senators have been making sure we're communicating and getting it out in the York County ether that, folks, if you're qualified and you think you could
apply,
please. I don't care if we've got four conservatives and four liberals.
Right.
I don't care. And I think some of what we had been hearing was that folks in the legal profession were trying to not steer, but they're saying, oh, no, we already have a good candidate. Don't apply.
It was a lot more play in politics.
Right. There were folks who were filtering and putting their fingers in a process that shouldn't have been there. And so I was very happy to see that in the 16th Circuit, we had, I think, six folks apply. And so really looking at that process and see what our choices would be come, I think, the final list gets published in, right before Christmas?
Yeah.
November, December? That list has already shrunk. Did you see?
No. I don't pay attention to the judicial elections we're back in session.
The latest update is we now have two candidates.
So I'm wondering, is that the bar situation?
I think.
Which is a whole nother problem. Like, I would like to remove them out of the situation.
So again, what occurred last time happened again this time in the sense of the bar gets a chance to call on the candidates' connections, and they call out in the legal community folks who have worked with some of these folks who are candidates for judge, and they get feedback. And what that tells me was that there was some negative feedback, and the bar was going to publish their opinion. And the candidate has a conversation with someone at the bar that says, look, and the choices are, if you're applying for to be a judge here in the 16th and the bar gets some complaints that you're not fit to be a judge, they're going to publish that. And that may, you know, not sit well with you. It may not do well for your career. And so you have a professional choice to make. Do I stand up and fight this stuff? Anonymous complaints, by the way.
Yeah.
And that's the heartburn for me. These are anonymous sourced complaints that derail someone's effort to become a judge. And I think that's got to be reformed. I don't mind the anonymous complaints, but if it rises to a level where it questions someone's credibility, ethics, professional demeanor, whatever it is.
I mean, did we have this problem before we went through judicial reform? And that's what I felt last year. I felt like this just arose just because of the way that we approach judicial reform.
You know,
and now all of a sudden the bar is making decisions to disqualify people before they even get to JMSC.
Yeah, so I just learned about this late last week. I think it was Friday that we now have.
So we've only got two.
Two. We now have two candidates. Yeah. So I haven't had a lot of chance to follow up on that to see what caused it, whatever. But I'm sure I'll be doing that, you know, just to find out. Because it's in those types of conversations where you find maybe some possibilities for reform. You know, whether it's, again, the bar.
I mean, there's nothing constitutionally that says that we have the bar involved.
Well, the good thing is, though, is the bar is like the professional association for the legal profession in the state, right? Now, there may be a few bad actors, but on the whole, right, you want to have that association there that gives non-lawyers like me and you some feedback on like, hey, she ain't good or he ain't good or he is good, she is good. So you want a little bit of that. My issue is if I was someone who was applying to be a judge and all of a sudden had a clean record, in my opinion, never had anything put on my ethics report, no, maybe another criminal defense attorney if I'm a prosecutor, no one ever has cited me for being unprofessional or unethical. All of a sudden, when I want to be judged, now they pop up. And it's anonymous. That's where I have the problem. I think we need to afford candidates some sort of, I want to meet my accuser.
Yeah.
And be able to defend myself. So that's, I think, what gives me the most heartburn.
And on the flip side, some might not come forward because they may work for that current
person. Correct. And if the person becomes a judge, now it's like, uh-oh, if I got to go appear in that court, will I get a fair shake?
Yeah.
So,
but
it's complicated.
Yeah.
For sure. So,
but nowhere in the Constitution does it say we have to have the bar involved. So we could just do the screening committee, be done with it, and move forward from there.
Yeah, I still would like the bar involved. I don't want the meddling. I don't want unsubstantiated anonymous complaints to derail someone's effort to become a judge if that's what they always dreamed of doing. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The whole reason that anyone was pushing for judicial reform, whenever I read, I knew nothing really about the JMSC and everything else, but I knew that we had a problem with attorneys appearing before judges that they
conflict
that were selected. I knew that. So I wanted judicial reform, and I was one of the people that actually campaigned on it as a freshman before I ever came in.
Yeah.
And then as I got in and I sat on that judicial reform committee, I learned from listening there that our system is not as broken, but perception is reality.
Right.
And the problem is people do not trust the output of the JMSC.
Right.
So now it seems like that trust, just since we changed things, has changed from the JMSC. And I know me personally, I did not trust the output coming out of the bar last year. Yeah. So, and if now we're going from 5 or 6 to 2, it makes me start questioning even further.
And I think those are all fair questions to have. Like
if we had the trust to begin with, this wouldn't even be a problem.
And like I said, it's Sunday. I think I got into this or got word and made a phone call or two on Friday. So this is breaking news.
Yeah. That I pretty much anything to do with the judges, like all the meetings, how people want to meet, just say, hey, this is who I am.
Yeah.
I decline everything until the first of the year.
Oh, yeah, correct. I think that's where we are as part of that process, right?
Yeah.
We don't, as legislators, let's not get way upstream and get involved with the bar and this, that, and the other. Totally agree.
And I tend to trust a few attorneys, a few prosecutors, a few law enforcement whenever
correct.
It comes to making those decisions.
Yeah.
And whenever it's not in our district, just like with the 16th Circuit, I have to lean on the people that were elected to represent that district, whether people like it or not. And that was my argument last year whenever people wanted to go against the 16th Circuit. It was like, look, this isn't even your circuit.
Yeah, right. There was like 11 or 12 of us, I think two, maybe three folks wanted to vote for the candidate. The other nine were like, no.
Yeah.
And that sent a resounding message to the to the body, Senator, the Senate and the House, hey, York does not want this person as a judge. We're going to respect that.
Yeah, and we have to, and you have to kind of lean on that because
100%.
While I might not agree with everything going on in Charleston, I don't represent Charleston.
Yes.
And there's a different mindset there, but those people that were elected for a reason,
mm-hmm.
because they do.
Yeah, so that was a little bit one of the things that came up in the last 2 weeks. But let's go back to this coastal erosion issue, and I brought up Ron Reddy, and then we segued over.
Sorry, my ADHD.
No. I tell you, man, I am learning. So I have a friend who's got a house over there in Isle of Palms, and she and her husband sent me some videos. And man, like, it looks like the ocean's coming underneath their house.
Yeah.
Like, it's bad. And I said, hey, I'm in construction. You know, if you put up some rock, boulder size, stuff like that, it probably helped dissipate that energy a little better than a sandbag or two. And they're like, they won't let us put any sort of hard. And I said, well, don't put up like a seawall, but you could put up a groin made of rock or a, you know, whatever. And they're like, no, you can't. And again,
Look, I can build you a retaining wall out of sandbags.
I am, you know, again, a little uneducated because I don't live on the coast anymore. And I was like, wait, what? So I called up DES and Myra, hey, credit to her. It was a Saturday. And she called me back. She's like, hey, Rep Sessions, what can I do for you? And we had a good conversation. Man, she had her coastal program director and a legal guy conference call with me on a Sunday morning. After
wow.
I got out of church and she got her three folks and we conference called. And, you know, they told me all of the setback, jurisdictional line, you know, everything from the high watermark to the shoreline, this public beach versus private property, and all of these things. I was like, look, I understand and I appreciate the legal sort of foundation that you're laying for me and beach renourishment acts and all
this. But a house is going into the ocean.
Correct. And I'm like, at the end of the day, the private property owner has to be able to protect their investment.
Right.
So can we use some common sense?
There's something called the Constitution that says that you have the right to protect your property.
Well, and it's like, can't we use, but again, there are so many things you got to sort of consider when you're talking about coastal beach and all those things. And I said, look, and I'm going to meet with her and her staff here in like a week or two because we're going to lay out some maps and look at all the problem areas down the coast. There's Harbor Island down there. IOP is a hot spot right now. But just to try to figure out, and you know, and Senator Goldfinch brought this up, I think, in the Senate earlier this year. And so, because he's from Georgetown, so he's a coastal senator. But just trying to use a little bit of common sense to be like, look, if the tide's coming in and you should, if you own a beach house that's on the shore, you should be able to protect your private property 20, 30
where your property lines are.
From the structure.
Yeah.
Right? Because, see, the thing is, that setback line can move as the tides move. You may think you have 100 feet, well, this year, but then next year, that 100 feet to the high water mark may come into 50 feet. And now your property just got taken because now that's public beach. You know what I mean? So it's a moving target, which, again, I get. We all want to enjoy the public beach. But, man, 20 feet, 30 feet off your house, you should be able to put some hardscaping like boulders, rocks, or whatever to figure that out and protect your property. Otherwise, I mean, hell, if I owned a beach house, I'd just sell it to Isle of Palms, the city. Say, hey, man, y'all spend $2, $3 million a year doing beach renourishment. Just buy my house. You know, I'll get out of here, man. But anyway, so just it again, and this is a common sense layman's terms because that's just the way I look at things. Something that you would think is simple or whatever, nah, man, it's just not. Everything has got nuances that, again, I learned.
That was put in place before we got there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've learned that. That's one of the things.
60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Before elected, you know? I just thought everything's just simple. Why don't we just do this? It's like.
Or undo you read this.
It. Yeah, or undo this. Let's just go ahead and change it. But there was 6 or 7 different laws and 50 regulations mm-hmm. that passed since then. That we have to go back.
Yeah.
I learned that dealing with the International Building Code. Like, it just drives me crazy anytime that we're adopting the International Building Code because you don't know what the heck's in it.
Oh,
no
right.
one's got time to read all of that.
Code. Yeah. And so, you know, again, that was just one of those things that came up in the last 2 weeks that, again, had to go to school on a little bit. And it was probably one of those hard knocks lessons because, you know.
But let's think about this, though. You, as a representative, you could spend 2 to 4 years working on that one issue.
Oh, yeah.
Which would impact so many people.
Yeah.
And there's 170 of us. If all of us could do that, then we could get a lot of things done.
Yeah, 100%.
But instead, we get caught up in, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do this, you didn't do this.
Hey, you didn't sign this pledge.
Yeah.
Folks, by the way, I don't sign pledges.
I think I'm done with signing pledges, too.
It's like, wait a minute, why do you want me to sign this pledge? Just look at my voting record.
I think the Moms for Liberty was the last one, and maybe the term limits, the congressional term limits.
And again, not to say that.
But it's like, I agree with what's written, but I'm just tired of signing the pledges and feel like, you know, you're beholden to this group, or this group is going to attack or defend you based on whether you signed a pledge.
Yeah. Or it's you signed the pledge and then they will use that to bop you on the head later on when, for some reason, through the way they interpret that pledge, you failed it, or you just didn't meet the standard. I'm just like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I mean, I'm all for parental rights.
I mean, I don't agree with anything 100%. Like, the Moms for Liberty pledge is pretty easy because it was pretty much, I didn't disagree with anything in it.
Yeah.
But whenever you start throwing legislation, and it's great, it's like, oh, let's write, we want to save children. And then all of a sudden, a bill does something, and you're like, well, wait a minute, that's not really going to save children. Like, you're viewing the legislation differently.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, but you said you want to save children. You must agree to this.
And that is sort of the game that we have to navigate when we go to Columbia and when someone throws a pledge in front of you. So
yeah, I'm done with the games in Columbia.
Well, and to that point, that's why you don't see me a lot in some of those fights. You know, I try to keep my head down and, to your point, just try to effectuate some change.
I'm like a firefighter, except for it's a fight. If there's a fight, I'm running in.
Yeah,
first.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to get involved, you know? So just call me the first responder.
Yeah. And we hadn't even talked about healthcare. Have you ever done Jason Broadwater's podcast?
No.
Went and did that on Friday.
But
Had a great conversation with him and Chris, man. It was just, we'd sat outside at Rock Hill Brewing in Millstone, you know? And, man, he is very interested in healthcare. I start talking about some of the PBM reform stuff and the insurance reform stuff, and he's just excited. He's like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, man. And I talked to him about medical billing transparency and how we cannot get that passed.
You got to bring your boy Mark Cuban.
Hey, I have been retweeting Mark Cuban's tweets. But, yeah, so we had a 3M sort of organizational meeting. We are trying to get more organized as subcommittee chairs and chair lady Celeste Davis. We schedule it, and we just want to be more organized to where when we get to work in January, we're hitting the ground running. I mean, hitting the ground running to where
ready to go, get things moving.
Subcommittee meetings, full committee meetings, so we can get stuff to the floor, because that's actually when I think the docket's light. Because we usually clear the calendar before we adjourn, and so we can. I'm gonna try to get a lot of stuff out and onto the floor.
I've had a lot of people reaching out to me about AI. I just don't know which direction, and I don't want to move just because I feel like I need to move.
Oh right, I do have to talk to you about some of that stuff, but that was another issue, on the thing of AI, higher ed.
We'll do our secret backroom deal after the podcast.
No, I had a great morning coffee meeting with Julius Friedrichsen.
Yeah.
You know, great guy.
Brilliant.
He's the VP of research and AI there at the University of South Carolina. Doing a lot of exciting stuff with the technology. You know, they have the neuro, the brain center that's going up right now. They got a lot of DOD stuff going on, Department of Defense, where they're utilizing AI with read recognition of amphibious craft and all those types of things. And I can't imagine doing his job every day, because it's always like they are always imagining how to improve this or that or the other.
All you gotta do is watch 80 sci-fi movies.
Yeah, that's right.
Spaceballs, Calm the Beach.
So just had a coffee with him and just got the juices flowing. And yeah. You know, you get on the horn, start calling people. Hey, why don't we do this? Why don't, you know? So, So yes, definitely remind me. We got to talk about that later.
All right, let's take a break.
What about you?
I was going to say, let's take a break, then we'll come back.
Yeah, sure. All right, I'm playing music now. This episode of Pints of Politics is brought to you by Comer Distributing. Comer Distributing Company is a wholesale beer distributor located in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Founded in 1971, Comer is a family-owned business that distributes beer and other beverages to York, Chester, Fairfield, Lancaster, Kershaw, Lexington, and Richland counties. You know, I was just saying.
Is that that new Taylor Swift album?
Yeah, baby. Nah. I was just saying, I think I did all the talking in that first segment, man. I'm just going to let
It was your issues.
enjoy this Not a Brewing pumpkin ale, man. And, you know.
Well, I got 2 weeks of the busiest weeks of my life, it seems like.
You were on the go, man. Every time we talked or whatever.
Living in an airport, and I learned if you fly into a little regional airport, just because you rented a car does not mean that you get a rental car.
Hey, don't even get me started on that crap, so, man.
They're you like, we got it reserved. Yeah.
Like, no, bro. Don't give me that RAV4. I want the fuller size.
Oh, I didn't care what car it was. I was like, look, if you got a bicycle with an engine on it, I will take it.
Give me one of them like, e-bikes.
Give me something.
Bring, bring.
Yeah.
So, you got a scooter?
I ended up having to Uber, which costs like, one-way Uber was as much as a car rental for 3 days.
Where were you?
I flew into Maryland and had to go to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. They were signing Gavin's Law in Delaware. Senator Pettyjohn led it up there, and they signed it into law, and I was honored to be there to participate in it. So I spent a couple of days there, and then immediately having to get back to the airport, the little regional airport, and the pilot overshot the runway twice and then finally made it on the third time. That's always fun. But it's the only time I've ever been on a plane and like walked out of the plane on stairs, like you see like in the 50s and the 60s.
Oh, yeah. You're right on the tarmac or what?
Yeah, right onto the tar. They're like, don't walk behind the jets. Like, yeah, no problem. But flew right back in. Then we had the Shucking for a Cause event. Which thank you for participating.
Oh, that was good times.
That was a good night.
It was
fun
a good turnout,
time.
Man.
It was. And you know, weather was about perfect.
It was.
A little bit of a chill.
I didn't get one single oyster.
You didn't?
No. Nope. You know how those things go, man.
Yeah.
Like, I went over there and checked, and they were about to come out. And then you just start getting pulled, man.
Hobos, I walked by, and he had like a plate of like six that were already shucked.
Yeah.
And I was like, can I grab these? I grabbed the already shucked ones.
Well, that's your
So
bit,
I was able to down them. Now, they had a really good sauce.
Yeah.
It was a pucker butt.
That's what
pepper company sauce.
That's what somebody said. Yeah. I was like, dang it, man.
It was hot, but it was good.
Yeah.
And pucker butt out of Fort Mill.
Yep.
So that was good local.
And it was
local.
Good seeing a lot of people, a lot of folks that we even had folks out of friends from Fort Mill come down. And yeah, it was a good time.
It was it from all over the state, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we did that. And then right after that event, I had to take off to Myrtle Beach. That Saturday night, Sunday, I'm taking off to Myrtle Beach. I've got to talk Monday and Tuesday at Myrtle Beach for the First Responders Conference.
Okay.
Did that, took right off from there because I had to speak first thing Wednesday morning at York High School.
Oh, okay.
Which was great because I was able to talk to 2,000 teens. Turned out close to 2,000.
Yeah.
I was just pulling. I know we gave out 2,000 bracelets.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But that was great because that was student-led.
Yeah.
That wasn't the school. That was the student saying, look, we want to focus on mental health, and we would like Representative Guffey to come in.
Yeah.
And talk about the message of Tomorrow Needs You. And then right after that Thursday, took off to Orlando for the
Disney
Moms
World?
For Liberty National Summit. Wife came down with me, wife and Callahan, which is good because they don't travel with me a lot. Yeah.
So they
were
to
able
Disney.
To, yeah, they were able to do Disney.
You do the work.
Yeah. So I was supposed to speak as a breakout session there, sharing Gavin's story, which I did. And then I got invited. I ran into Dawn Hawkins, which used to be with Nkosi. So I knew her. She was there with her group and they were doing a panel. It was, trying to think of everyone that was on it, but I know Byron Donald's wife was one of the panelists as well. But we sat there and we did a panel on the App Store Accountability Act. afterwards. Moms for Liberty has endorsed the App Store Accountability Act, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
I think we were one of the first states to introduce it, although four other states have passed it. And then I flew right out of Orlando at 83-degree weather and landed in Chicago with 43-degree weather for the Google event with legislators from all over the country. I mean, there were some even from Hawaii.
And I think that's when you and I were talking.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, what city are you in?
It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting good at these airports. So
how was the how was that Google event up there? I mean,
it was really good.
What are they talking about? What are
I mean, the first 2 days are pretty much about how great they are and these are the products, and which is good because you want to know what's going on.
Yep.
And to be fair, from the big tech companies that I work with, I think Google is a far better actor than many of the others. They report more CSAM images than, say, Apple. They are, within their design, they are taking the approach of protect first due to situations they saw where algorithms were getting thrown in on YouTube.
Right.
Like, I feel like they are, and they're hiring people that were advocates. So, like, the main person over compliance used to be with Thorn, which is to protect children online. So she's bringing in her experience.
Well, and wasn't it Google that just recently just fessed up and said, hey, we were blocking folks and we're not doing that anymore? Like during the COVID, wasn't that them?
And we actually had that discussion.
Okay.
Because,
I mean, again, you know, COVID was a crazy time, but they blocked a lot of folks on YouTube. They ended up happened to be conservatives, but they fessed up. They said, hey,
In this event, there was Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
So we heard some people talk about, oh, we're seeing this rise in white supremacy, and why can't y'all stop this?
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of brought it up. It's like, okay, so what's your line? Like, at what point, we understand about children, but at what point do we say we're violating your free speech?
Yeah.
And they even brought up the point of COVID. Like, we ran into this during COVID.
Right.
And you can't afford to be on the wrong side of debates like that.
Yeah. And so, and all I mean to say is, I think the corporate, you know, when I say corporate, I just mean sort of the bigger, the Fortune 500s, those guys, Google obviously being one of them. I think their folks have seen the mistakes of maybe some other brands. And I'm thinking Bud Light, right?
Yeah.
Bud Light did the whole thing where the guy dressed up as a girl on a can thing, put all over social media, and it backfired on them, right? They lost the market share.
Dressed up?
Yeah, drag. Wasn't it a drag? Something like that? But anyway.
Well, it was just a trainee on the can.
Trainee? Okay. So that's what I'm saying.
Train on a can.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. InBev made the brand mistake of, once they made a mistake, they didn't fess up, take responsibility, and then correct it and move on. Whereas more recently, Cracker Barrel. Right, Cracker Barrel tried to change a logo. And
on a state level, the Freedom Caucus.
You know, Cracker Barrel, what do? They get some backlash. They say, hey, you know what? Nah, we like the old timer in the barrel back on the logo. We ain't messing with nothing. And I think maybe they didn't lose as much as, say, Bud Light. Google, same thing. Google said, hey, we made some mistakes in the past. We are committed to not making those same mistakes again.
We've seen a lot of companies.
Yeah.
Like, coming back.
And so,
instead of trying to buy into the hot button of the day.
I think that builds more trust, right?
Yeah.
You know, I used to not use Google as a search engine. I would use other ones. Now I'm back, sort of back using Google again.
Yeah.
I mean, they still track my stuff, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I use all the different AIs trying to compare, but they're doing a lot of things about, like we talked about, design and making sure that certain things aren't in the design.
Right.
So with Gemini, they already have that thought about in the design.
Okay.
So they're monitoring those things. So if someone is, let's say someone is suicidal and they are talking like on the OpenAI chatbot tells this 14-year-old, kill yourself so we can spend eternity together. The Gemini chatbot starts whenever it is feeling that. And the same thing with their algorithms. If they see that you're watching violent video, like they're trying to throw in stuff to bring you back instead of sending you down the rabbit hole, but
it's
with the AI design.
Right. It's an interesting idea whether that is, you know, we're familiar with when you build a house, there are certain standards to build a house. it's interesting now on that sort of level, on the sort of tech level of smart design of, hey, if you're going to build an AI program or you're going to build a website or whatever it is.
And we talked about it, like default to safety was one of the first bills that we right. did. But, you know, Google not only has to look at it from an app store, but they're also an app developer.
Right.
So they have to see it from both sides.
Yep.
And that was one of, that was a very interesting discussion. And as I was talking to like their person that's over legislative initiatives across the country, was having the conversation with him, and he was saying, look, it's not that we disagree with what is written in the App Store Accountability Act. It is, there is certain language that just, how do we go about it programming wise? And right. like the intent, they agree with. The way it's written, they think that there needs to be some changes, and I'm willing to have that conversation.
100%.
But whenever you ambush me in a committee meeting and then want something, you're not getting anything but the middle finger whenever I walk out.
And those same types of discussions, you know, are in a lot of our conversations, whether it's mRNA technologies, right?
Yeah.
If that's what I heard when we were talking about some of these issues in amongst the 3M and medical subcommittee members, we started talking about how can we better safeguard patients when it comes to this new sort of mRNA stuff, and you know, bring in some of those pharmaceutical companies in to discuss some of those things. It's like, look, we're all about safeguards, but it can't be too strict to where it stifles innovation and investment, because you know that is a technology that is emerging and might be used for public health good. So
that was one of the things I didn't understand this year during the debate. I mean, I know that there was amendments put up, and typically you think of, and I'm not going to say Freedom Caucus, but I'm saying the more libertarian view is I shouldn't need a doctor if I want to take ivermectin.
Mm-hmm.
Like I shouldn't have to get a prescription, right?
Right.
It's your body. You should be able to put in it what you want. But the argument became against like mRNA or mRNA
yeah.
vaccines and yep. against, and it's like, you got to have a doctor's permission. And I'm like, wait a minute, why is this? If you're old enough to make the decision, then why do you have to have a doctor before you do it? And you're taking full responsibility and you know your consequences. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that probably goes back to just the process of how do things get on a shelf? How do things get to the threshold of over the counter versus you and I going to pick
yeah.
up ibuprofen, right? So once it gets FDA approval, then how do we handle those products? And so, and again, I don't know them all. I think I have a bill that I'll hear regarding the ivermectin being, you go see your physician, he prescribes it, and you can get it over the counter versus being able to just pull it off. But I was educated a little bit this past week. You can get ivermectin on the internet right now. And I didn't know that.
Do you trust what you're getting on the internet?
I don't get it.
I mean you can get the Ozempic off the internet, but that you're seeing people die from it too.
And again, consumer
if
beware,
I'm getting
right?
ivermectin, I'm going to Tractor Supply. I'm getting the horse face, you know?
I'm getting mine from Joe Rogan. But yeah, so, I mean, yeah, just a lot of, it's wild how you're talking about some of this stuff with tech and stuff, and it's like, oh, that's the same. Same, similar conversations.
Well, and there's a certain point to where government doesn't have to be the one making the decision.
Yeah, you're an adult. Correct.
But whenever you're a child, that's what I'm looking at, and that's the reason I said it was very interesting as you were talking earlier, and you were talking about children, and it's like, yeah, there's aspects where you need legislation if you have bad actors,
right?
If you're not protecting children.
Well, and I think you and I probably agree for the most part, government's role is to provide an environment for private industry to thrive and succeed for the public
responsibly.
Interest. Right. You
right.
know, correct. It's not so much, you know, because that's some of the conversations I had on another guy's podcast on Friday. Was he was talking about, isn't it government's role to give free healthcare? And I said, no.
No.
I said, no.
That's, where does
that's
it
a
say
doctor.
That?
That's a doctor or physician or a healthcare facility.
Yeah.
But a government should be able to provide the landscape that those things succeed in a, you know, to where they can bring services to the patients. Well, so
I came back from Chicago, went to the DOT ad hoc yeah, committee meeting.
Yeah.
We had the, and I'm probably going to get the name wrong. I think it was the Aspen line or Alpine line. like the mass transit train.
Oh, yeah.
And they were presenting that as part of handling mass transit. So as I've been looking into that, amazingly, just doing some, you know, internet safari searches.
Right.
Something I found very interesting is private sector built the subways in New York,
mm-hmm.
not public. And it wasn't until that private sector said, okay, a nickel is not enough. We've got to go up to a dime. And the government said, no, 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 no. So they took it from them. And now it's $3 like a trip. But it went from a nickel to a dime to now right. government's got it. There's $3 and it's failing and everything else. I wonder why we don't have, and I've often said the same thing about toll roads.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we could incentivize private people to build roads to come in, now we have to ensure that we do not allow a private company to have eminent domain.
Right.
To take a property, for sure.
This is a similar conversation with the breaking news on Friday that Santee Cooper announced that they're going to restart the VC Sumner project. But it's going to be totally privately funded, and the ratepayers aren't going to have a dime risked, right? Or
seems like good news.
Yeah. So I think they award it to Brookfield. So Brookfield is looking, you know, going through that due diligence phase. But to that point.
Yeah. We need more private companies put money in instead of going to the government and saying, why don't we increase this? Yeah. Why don't we increase that?
Correct.
You know? I mean, so, just if you can make it affordable, it's great to have free transportation. But if transportation was a dollar,
yeah,
it's a lot more affordable and a lot more people can use it. You know?
I tell you what, going through Charlotte, I'm jumping on that toll every time.
Yeah.
To avoid, especially rush hour.
I just avoid Charlotte.
Well, I think you don't even go north of the river, right?
I try not to. I mean, I think that
that's
North Carolina has adopted TKK and Fort Mill. David Martin will disagree with me, but and the Indian land part too.
Yeah,
it's all North Carolina to me now. The Mason-Dixon River.
Yeah, that's right.
But at that DOT meeting was good, and then came back, did the Bobcat Dash at Callahan School, which is like running to raise money.
Yep.
Baseball yesterday morning, went trick-or-treating at Ebenezer Campground. You ever take the kids out to the Ebenezer Campground for the trick-or-treat? Fun time. You're just going around to each campsite. And people are competing with their campsite decoration, so it's very good.
Tis the season for the trunk-or-treats and all those things. I've been seeing those go on around town for at least, what, 3 or 4 days now.
Yeah.
I tell you, it's going to be great for Halloween to be on a Friday. I can't remember the last time Halloween was on a Friday.
I don't know. Last night, I know there were a lot of Halloween parties, and I was pulling out of Lee's, and a car about ran me over doing 100 down Cherry Road. What? About ran into somebody else, and I'm just thinking, oh, goodness.
Right here?
Yeah. Right up the road here. And I just hope that they are really putting out the DUI check stops.
Yeah.
During this time period. Also got some good news, and this will kind of wrap me up, but while I've been gone, I was named Vice Chair of Technology and Communications for NCSL.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be good. I got to go to DC for that. Sweet. Kind of kick that off. And then ALEC contacted me.
Mm-hmm.
They are wanting to propose Gavin's Law to be a nationally proposed bill.
Oh, like part of their...
Yeah.
Cool.
So that would be huge. Say,
that's the great thing that, like when you were talking about Delaware, it's like, man, that's great. You know what I mean?
That's reaching other states.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
So I think
definitely proud of you.
Yeah, that would be huge to me, especially on the education portion.
Yeah, right.
If that's what's mandated. Even if you don't change anyone's sextortion law, but they're just adopting the educational portion, that would be huge. Also got notified that I got an award coming up in January in Ohio. I think it's called the Love and Hope Award from the Do It for James Foundation, which James Woods was a child that also passed due to sextortion. This is their first annual award, but I'm honored out of all the parents that they have honored me with it. And then got an award, the Samuel Chapman Award, which will be in LA. That's in April, for doing exceptional things for children across the country.
So you got to go to LA next year?
In April. It'll be my first time. I even said I'm always scared to fly into LA because that's the day it's going to fall off the map. Like, I try to keep off of California as much as possible.
Yeah.
I'll stop in Phoenix, maybe Nevada.
Yeah.
I hadn't even been to Vegas in years, so.
Yeah, you're not missing much. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy Vegas, but 2 days is about.
Well, speaking of Vegas and wagering.
Yeah.
Have you looked to see what we did last week? I know how we did this week.
Yeah.
Because we just had to post them up online.
I think, so this past weekend, I think I may have went 3-2. I think the week before, I only went like 1-4.
Yeah, I think I caught up with you a little bit.
Yeah, because you were 15-20 and I was, I don't know.
My 0-for week did not help at all.
Yeah, well, I almost went 0-for 2 weeks ago. I went 1-4, man. I mean, it seemed like everything was breaking like your way or away from me. And man, I tell you, here's another, I want to defend our college picks, right? So if I'm like 20, I think I was like 22-13 like 2 weeks ago. You were 15-20. And I started looking back at the games. We're not picking the slouch games.
No, these are.
We are picking like the more difficult. I mean, we're picking the Oklahoma Ole Miss game. You know, we're picking Bama SC. We're picking, what were some of the other?
I think we pushed this week.
Yeah,
so I looked at it because I covered with South Carolina. And you lost that one. And then you won the Ole Miss Oklahoma.
Yeah. But we were both 3-2, right?
Yeah.
Just different. Yeah.
So we didn't gain anything there. The week before, I don't know. I didn't really go through it. So we got to add
that
it.
That was my worst
But
week
I think far. I did pretty yeah. good, and you did yeah, pretty you bad.
Were, yeah. You.
So LSU Vandy, I'm assuming I won that because Vandy had 1.5.
Yeah, I can't even remember back that far. But we'll post up sort of mid-season just to see how. Because, I mean, think about it. Once college is over, then we're gonna start getting like all NFL weekends. So,
and these were picked like I'm about to go into that bill signing. You're like, hey, I need your games.
Yeah.
We didn't even realize it was a Saturday.
Correct. Yeah, and thankfully you were a little proactive this week. You like sent them on Friday. I was like, oh, thank God, someone's looking after this. But well, what you got before we wrap up? What you got going on next week?
I'm speaking at 8 different schools in Anderson County to middle and high school students. So that's going to be a good 3 days doing that. And then
when you go to Anderson, and I'm just thinking of Don Chapman, do you ever just call him up and just say, hey, man, you want to come out with me? And
no, because usually I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
Like, I'm not a planner. I'm spontaneous. Like, I'll show up. And I might be like, hey, I'm in your city. I'm going to grab a meal. You want
to
meet me?
I'm very similar to, like, if I'm working in other people's districts, I'll find who's around to
get me. I think Blake Sanders is going to meet with me one night.
Okay.
He was talking about he wants to show me how to fish, which it might have gotten too cold already. But
you know, I thought he had a good article. I don't know if it was his Substack or whatever. But just talking about sort of local politics where – you know, that's where folks just try to make a difference in their communities. And with this online and social media presence of always 24/7 criticizing everybody, the good people are getting out.
Yeah.
Or the folks who want to try to do some good are getting out because it's just not worth it.
That actually want to serve.
You know?
And I always find it funny how people say you get elected and you change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what happens if you get in and then you realize that what you were saying before, you were the ignorant one, and now you see that it's not exactly that way.
Or maybe that you see, you know, like what you're saying, and like you learn and you develop a better, more educated opinion of an issue, and, you know, now what you were screaming when you were just, you know, Joe Public on the street was like, that might have been a little ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things, a pet peeve of mine, don't speak in certainties unless you're certain. So, it's a frustrating point.
Yeah, well, I feel like I'm a little bit, you know, getting a little bit of Brandon Guffey in me, man. I think I'm running to Charleston for some meetings and then doing a legislative panel on some healthcare, telehealth stuff. And then I run to Greenville to speak on another panel.
You're on the gubernatorial track. Like, you're just bouncing around South Carolina.
Responding to tort reform.
Yeah.
In Greenville, and then I get back here for Halloween. So, hey, in Rock Hill, on Thursday evening, Blue Dogs doing the benefit concert out at Miracle Park.
Oh, nice.
So, folks, if you are in the Rock Hill area, feel free to, on Thursday, go check out a great band just below Hootie in South Carolina Natives Mines. They'll be playing at Miracle Park. I think it's $25 a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love to see Blue Dogs.
My sister's coming in town from.
I need to go just Charleston. So I can get a new t-shirt. I need a new long sleeve t-shirt.
Right. So, so pretty busy week for me as well. And then let me highlight a little bit our friend and colleague in the House, Representative Brandon Cox, who has been on the show before a couple times now. I mean, he coined the term hijacked. He was just selected to chair a ad hoc committee on DJJ and how we look at criminal justice and law enforcement when it comes to young adults and minors. So he's been pouring into that for a little while now. He has selected members of that ad hoc. I am proud to report that I'm now on my third ad hoc. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. No. But you know, we had a case here where someone, a 15-year-old or 16-year-old, was driving 65, 70 miles an hour in a neighborhood, struck a golf cart, killed a young woman, wonderful young woman, Marley Drew Sullivan, who went to school with my daughter. And in talking and getting to know Ben and Stacey Sullivan and how that case was adjudicated, we started seeing some gaps in what I would say service, right? How do you hold someone accountable if they're 15 or 16, the sentence and all, and what sort of voice does the victim's families have? What rights does the victim's families have in knowing how sort of that the person who was driving the car, how their prison sentence is being sort of carried out and all those things. There's not a lot of transparency there. And another thing I learned was that once the family court judge issues the sentence, that's it. That person's turned over to DJJ, and there's no other judge. The judge really doesn't have a voice in anything after that, which was really surprising to me, right? DJJ, the administrators, really just say, well, you've been on good behavior, we'll let you out. You know what I mean? It doesn't go back to a judge. You don't have to, and you don't, there wasn't a lot of notification with the victim's families either. So, like, if you're moving someone from a maximum security to, say, a halfway home, there's no communication. So it's just trying to balance those things of the privacy of the young person who committed a crime, but also with the need to know of the victim's families. So there's just a lot of stuff when we talk about crimes committed by 15, 16, and even 12-year-olds, right? When it comes to, say, if they were an adult, it'd be a felony.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's
got... That's a difficult...
It is.
...balancing act.
It is. And look, not to strawman DJJ or DSS, because there's a lot of hardworking folks over there, and they've got a tough hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, because it is. It's very difficult to deal with a 13-year-old who has committed murder. You know what I mean? Like, how do you deal with that 13-year-old? Is there potential to save that life, right, through some prison time, through some whatever? And these folks have got to make those hard decisions.
Yeah, but as a parent that's lost a child, like, wanting that justice.
Correct.
That's where that...
That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to tell you right now.
It's not an easy time.
I will be on the front page of a paper.
Yeah.
The person that was responsible for Gavin's out in 5 years.
Correct. 100%.
Yeah.
And so
there's no question about it. And I families have to have that justice, and they should have that input.
100%. And so that's some of the topics. Those are some of the issues that this ad hoc committee is going to be dealing with. I would say by this session, we're probably going to have two or three bills that we're going to be trying to get through the House. And that is, I think, stiffening the penalties.
Okay.
You know, when you have a 15 or 16-year-old who has committed murder and it's proved intent, they shouldn't be let out when they're 21.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so real accountability, because what we're hearing from law enforcement is that, look, they know it's a joke. They know that they're going to be out in a year and a half, 3 years.
Well, and we're seeing that across the country.
Yeah.
With these kids that are committing these horrific crimes and kind of laughing about it.
And so, you know, again, thankful for the speaker making this a priority to form this ad hoc because, you know, there are some of our cities in and around Columbia, whether it's Beaufort, has got a lot of things going on down there with youth crime, and there needs to be some accountability. If you're 15, 16, and you're committing felonies, especially repeat offenders, they need to see some serious time.
You see, whenever I was growing up, if you committed a felony, you were pretty much charged as an adult. There was no youthful offense.
Correct.
If it was a felony, it was a felony.
Right. And we're not talking about boosting a car.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? We're talking about violent.
But there's many things that, as an example, the people that broke into my house, stole a neighbor's car, stole all of this stuff, they got 5 years. And I got a letter in the mail from the solicitor's office stating sentenced to 5 years and going to this location, right? In my day, it seemed like if you just stole a car, you're looking at least that.
You would think.
Not to mention breaking into someone's home and stealing, you know, a felony amount of goods as well.
Yeah, no, I think we're going to be more focused on the sexual assaults, CSC stuff, child sexual assault, or sex crimes, looking at, you know, rape, murder, highly aggravated nature assault, stuff like that. Mm. So,
well, good luck with that. I couldn't sit through that.
A lot of work to be done.
I don't want
to
hear that testimony.
No, no. So, but looking forward to that. Thankful that, you know, to be on yet another ad hoc committee. I'm going to rely on Representative Cox to do a lot of that heavy lifting.
The insurance and the DOT has been enough this year. And I've had to miss some of both. I'm still traveling until mid-December.
Yeah.
Right now. So it's very difficult to participate in anything.
Hey, man. And I tell you, you know, we're having some meetings already. I think we'll come back. Aren't we going to get together like in December down in Columbia?
Just caucus meetings.
Yeah, just to have a lunch and set some priorities and just get ready to roll come January.
Yeah.
And again, this is a part-time job.
My mistake this year was the year before I was gone twice testifying.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was testifying and called to do so, I got blasted online about missing session to be up in D.C. and all this other stuff. Yeah. So this year I was saying, I'm going to try not to miss anything, and I'm going to schedule everything for as soon as I get out of session.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as I got out, I over-scheduled.
Oh, right.
And now, I'd even said I'm going to slow down. Nothing's coming up between December, but now I've got the trip to the Rains Act, the NCSL, and the ALEC meeting. ALEC is in Dallas. And they're all happening at the same time where I already had previous speaking engagements.
Right.
For other things. So it's like I'm trying to schedule, okay, I got to talk at this time, then I'm leaving, and I'm going to fly out. By the time I get there, I'll be there for time for that.
Yeah, well, don't, you know.
And let's just pray the government shutdown is still not going on, because
bro,
one little delay will throw up the whole schedule. What are we, like,
day 25 of that?
Yeah.
I tell you, man, folks need to get together. But, you know, I mean, do you expect anything more than from D.C. politics?
I've learned not to expect anything from D.C. politics.
Hey, but, you know, they can do it at their own peril because, you know, I think more and more states are just getting sick and tired of it and saying, you know what, that's fine. We'll deal with it.
Convention of states, baby. Let's go ahead and have that convention. Let's get some things changed. Yeah. Like, we have to have a balanced budget. We could enact some term limits or at minimum age limits.
Yeah.
And get some of this stuff fixed. I mean, like Mitch McConnell falling out at a meeting. Like, what the hell? Retire.
I know,
like,
man.
Don't still try to serve.
Well, but you know why a lot of folks don't want to retire from Congress? They get a lot of good stock tips, you know? I mean, these portfolios, folks, are just...
So you tell me I should have ran for Congress?
Well, that wraps it up this week. Safe travels this week, man. Again, thanks to Comer Distributing for providing the tasty beverage.
Gorgeous.
Pumpkin ale. And
I like it. I mean, it's a good one beer for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not one of those that down quick and then, you know, during the break, grab another or anything else. I'm still sipping. I still got the bottom portion on this. It feels like it's, I didn't even look at calories, but it feels filling.
Yeah, right. It does definitely feel filling. And but allspice pumpkin, good fall beer. Thanks for Comer Distributing for sponsoring yet another episode of the podcast.
And you thank y'all for listening and supporting us.
Yeah.
Ways to do that. Like, share all of our social media. Follow us on Facebook, on X, Instagram.
On YouTube, subscribe.
YouTube, yeah. Or you can go to pintsandpolitics.show. Like, subscribe, share. Invite more people. Let's get geared up before we kick back in this year. I think this year is going to be pretty exciting. We still don't know if we've got challengers yet in the election.
We'll find out in March.
We will find out. But thank you all for supporting us, and have a great day.
Have a good one.